Welcome to the Perry Johnson Laboratory Accreditation Podcast, where you can expect the latest news and discussions relevant to the laboratory accreditation industry. Today's episode is a previously recorded webinar. If you'd like to tune into our upcoming webinars, visit our website at www.pjlabs.com or give us a follow on your favorite podcast app. Thank you for tuning in.
Good afternoon, depending on where you're logged in to today. My name is Mike Kramer. I will be the presenter for this September monthly webinar. As you can see from the screen, this month's topic is corrective action, requirements, and good practices. I want to thank everybody for logging in. The duration of this webinar should be approximately 1 hour. I don't anticipate it going that long. There will be a time at the end allocated to answer some questions. Okay, to start off with, one thing I would like to present is a comparison. We have two parts of the standard, corrective action, and we have preventive action. Corrective actions are steps that are taken to remove causes of an existing nonconformance or undesirable situation. Preventive action, on the other hand, are steps that are taken to remove the causes of potential situations that are undesirable. So in a nutshell, corrective action is reactive. A problem, a nonconformance has already happened. Preventive action, on the other hand, is proactive. A potential nonconformance or problem is foreseen, and preventive action has been implemented in order to prevent it from happening. Hasn't happened yet. Corrective action, it has already happened. With this presentation, we're going to look at corrective action. However, a lot of the tools and the corrective action, root cause analysis, and things like that could be crosswalked over to preventive action. Probably the biggest difference is exactly when you implement corrective and when you implement preventive. However, as far as once it's implemented, this presentation should cover those steps that would be put into place for preventive action as well. We're going to dive in and we're going to look at the 17025 here. And the very first requirement in section 411, which is corrective action, is general 411.1. The laboratory shall establish a policy and shall designate appropriate authorities for implementing corrective action when nonconforming work or departures from the policies and procedures in the management system or technical operations have been identified. A further note there, a problem with the management system or with the technical operations of the laboratory may be identified through a variety of activities such as control of nonconforming work, internal or external audits, management reviews, feedback from customers, and from staff audits. So a couple things I want to bring to light here. A policy, you're required, 17025 requires a policy and procedure. A policy states what the intentions of the lab is. In other words, the lab will institute a corrective action when any of the elements of the quality management system is not being followed or a nonconformance is identified. And then you would have a procedure, which is, okay, you have this policy that's stated. The procedure is the instruction or method of how the organization will implement the policy. Still looking at the 411.1, also states the laboratory needs to designate appropriate personnel for the implementation of corrective action and to ensure it is implemented correctly. Typically, as an assessor, I go out and I do assessments on behalf of Perry Johnson Laboratory Accreditation. Typically, I'll see this as a function of the designated quality manager. however that needs to be identified as far as implementing the corrective action policy and procedure. And lastly, there's a note there. It specifies a need of corrective action may arise from, and this is not an all-encompassing list here. It goes into the various elements that may arise, which you would need to turn the keys and implement your corrective action procedure. Non-conforming testing or calibration work, i.e. using a piece of equipment that was out of specs, a technician not following procedure, using equipment that's exceeded its calibration interval. Staff observations, perhaps you have a sharp employees that may notice problems that are being done within the procedure. So having a staff observation, an example could be inadequate procedures brought forth through the staff. Internal audits, you're required at 17025 to perform internal audits. If you have any findings in those internal audits, you will need to implement the correct procedure in order to identify the root cause and take appropriate corrective action. Management reviews, need for potential corrective action could arise during a management review meeting. We have external audits. We have, in parentheses there, you may have customers that may come in and audit your testing or calibration facilities or the accrediting body, PJLA, for example. We go in, we do assessments. If we have any non-conformances, they, of course, are written up. And we require the organization to submit to us on their corrective and corrective action documentation, their corrective action that they're going to take in order to close the nonconformance. That, along with any requested objective evidence, is required by us at Perry Johnson prior to closing any nonconformances that has arisen via the external audit done by PJLA. Other sources could be customer feedback. You're required through 17025 to see customer feedback. And customer complaints. If valid complaints that come through the organization, the lab may, of course, need to act on customer complaints, especially if they're reoccurring, and institute their procedure for for corrective action. Going further within the standard 411, 411.2 addresses cause analysis. Specifically, the procedure for corrective action shall start with an investigation to determine the root cause of the problem. Right off the bat there, and you see I highlighted start, the procedure for corrective shall start with this root cause analysis. As a note within the standard, cause analysis is the key and sometimes the most difficult part, in the corrective action procedure. Often the root cause is not obvious, and thus a potential careful analysis of all potential causes of the problem is required. Potential causes could include customer requirements, the samples, sample specifications, methods and procedures, staff skills and trainings, consumables or equipment in its calibrations. So exactly what is a root cause? A simple definition would be a process to define, evaluate, and systematically analyze a problem to determine the underlying factor or reasons for the problem. So basically the objective of the root cause is to dig down to the roots, to get to the reason why the nonconformance occurred, or if eliminated, will significantly diminish the likelihood of reoccurrence. Barney Fife on Mayberry would say, nip it in the bud. So as a further depiction of root cause and root cause analysis here, basically we have a problem. The problem is obvious. So you can see the picture of the weed here. The underlying cause of the problem is actually below the surface. The word root and root cause analysis refer to the underlying causes, not the one cause. Hence, more than one root cause may be identified, which may require more than one corrective action. Root cause analysis is a technique that helps answer the question of why the problem occurred in the first place. It seeks to identify the origin of the problem using a specific set of steps with associated tools to find the primary cause of the problem so that you can first determine what happened, second determine why it happened, and then finally figure out what to do to reduce the likelihood that it will happen again. A root cause analysis assumes that systems and events are interrelated. An action in one area triggers an action in another and another and so on. By tracing back, these actions can discover where the problem started and how it grew into the system symptoms you're facing now. I like to refer to it as working backwards. Applying root cause analysis can be thought of as basically working backwards. Have a nonconformance, you have a problem, certain things were put into motion that led up to it. Hence, you work backwards to determine what the root cause exactly was. You'll typically find three basic root causes. Identify them as physical causes, which are tangible materials. Item failed in some way. Well, look at the, do you see the bottom of the slide here, we have a picture of a vehicle that apparently has had a little accident there. And physical causes of what exactly happened there. An example on here, the physical could be the brake stopped working. Well, we could take it a little further than that. Human causes. People did something wrong or did not do something that was needed. Human causes typically lead to a physical cause. For example, okay, the brakes didn't work. No one filled the brake fluid, which led to the brakes failing. Okay, so take it even further. We'll look at another type, organizational causes. A system, process, or policy that people use to make decisions to do their work is faulty. For example, looking at the situation below here. No one person was responsible for vehicle maintenance, and everyone assumed someone else had filled the brake fluid. So it's obvious what the problem was there at the top, the physical cause, that the brakes did not work, hence causing the mishap there. Digging a little bit deeper, we look at human causes and organizational causes. Okay, you want to look at the techniques for root cause analysis. A root cause analysis should be performed as soon as possible after the error or variance occurs. Otherwise, important details may be missed. All of the personnel involved in the area should be involved in the analysis. Without all parties present, the discussion may lead to fictionalization or speculation that will dilute the facts. So root cause, corrective action and root cause, there's a wealth of information out there. There's various methods that can be done. There's a depiction at the on the slide here of some of the more prevalent ways and techniques or methods of performing a root cause analysis. We're going to take a look at just a few of these. I would say probably the most well-known and the most popular technique is a method called the five whys analysis, which is basically exactly what it states. You ask the why five times techniques. By the time you get to the fifth why, you should have gotten to the root cause. So by repeatedly asking the question why, you can peel away the layers of an issue and get to the root cause of a problem. keep asking why until you reach the actionable level. All right, we're going to take the five whys, and we're going to look at an example here of a problem that this happened. So we're going to have to take corrective action, which is depicted at the bottom of the screen here. So basically, a lavatory was cut by a dissection knife. Employing the five whys method, we asked the question why. The knife was left in the sink. Once again, why? The area was not cleared on the previous day. Again, we'll ask why. Clearing is not a daily habit. Again, asking why for the fifth time. Why is clearing not a daily habit? Because standard operating procedures / documentation for clearing do not exist. Why? I think in this particular example, an accident has already happened. We've taken corrective action. We're going to employ the five whys, and taking this down to the fifth why, actually employing a standard operating procedure, perhaps employing it within the work instruction as far as establishing requirements for cleaning the area, perhaps will prevent this from happening again. Okay, five whys. Some of the advantages that in utilizing the five whys is the tool is extremely easy to use, and it does not require a great deal of training. As a matter of fact, it can be used by any person at any level in the organization. However, it gives the best results when a team of people work on the problem together. Next, there is rarely any need to collect data for using this tool, and it does not call for statistical analysis of any sorts. So for smart organizations, may not need to divulge into perhaps could have been the first accident that ever happened in a facility, and may not have any other enough data to go back and look at any sort of workman compensation claims or anything as depicted in the previous example. Another advantage would be if a problem has more than one root cause, then this tool helps to determine the root causes between them. That was sort of depicted on the previous example. And the process generally unearths a whole lot of problems that are related to the main problem. So with advantages, we're going to look at a few disadvantages. Confirmation biases. People tend to jump to conclusions when solving problems. The experience and inexperience alike fall victims when performing unguided deductive reasoning. Secondly, a possible disadvantage was you can't go beyond current knowledge. Can't go beyond the person's current knowledge. One must know the cause and effect chain before one can find it. Single cause issue. Often people who apply five whys just follow one causal chain. Since accidents are seldom caused by a single causal factor, they only analyze a fraction of the issues that need to be solved. They miss the chance to solve the major problems. And at the bottom there is a resource for you that divulges a little bit deeper into the 5Y analysis and the method being employed here. Another popular method, I would say falling behind the 5Ys that I see would be what's called a fishbone or Ishikawa or cause and effect diagram. And this will group causes into categories. This may include people, measurements, methods, material, environments, and machine. The fishbone diagram forces you to consider all possible causes of a problem instead of focusing on the most obvious one. Here, causes are grouped into several categories to easily identify the correct sources of the variation. Then we got the onset of a fishbone diagram. Moving on, see an example of perhaps here we have a issue that's being looked at, which is loss of sales. And on the screen is a listed into the various categories and then subcategories within those categories that will be looked at in order to determine the cause of the problem. In this area, it's loss of sales. Again, we're going to look at some advantages of the fishbone or Ishikawa or cause and effect diagram. One advantage is it identifies cause and effects relationships and problems. Secondly, the method operates through the function of joint brainstorming discussions. Thirdly, brainstorming allows for broad-ranging thinking, steering teams away from interrupt thinking patterns. The diagram asks, why does this happen again and again at each stage as potential causes is identified? And finally, fishbone allows for prioritizing relevant causes so that predominating underlying root cause is addressed first. Couple disadvantages is that's may or may not disagree with these. Brainstorming produces irrelevant potential causes along with relevant ones, resulting in a time and energy drain. Brainstorming is often based in on opinion as on fact and evidence. Actually, a very large space for working out the diagram is needed for complex problems with many branching bones and Y bones. And finally, the complex interrelation of multiple factors are difficult to show on a fishbone. Yeah, Peralto analysis, that's going to be the last one we're going to look at here. And you saw from the first depiction there's many other. I just, for time constraints, I've selected three of these. What the Pareto analysis does, it's also known as the Pareto principle or 80-20 rule, and it assumes that a large majority of problems, 80%, are determined by a few important causes, 20%. It is a formal technique used where many possible courses of action are competing for attention. In essence, the problem solver estimates the benefits delivered by each action, then selects a number of most efficient actions that deliver a total benefit reasonably close to the maximum possible one. You'll see here in a little bit, I have a depiction of one. Right, you can see it's a problem, and then there's a problem, and within that problem, there's various other problems that are incorporated into it. So in its simplest terms, Pareto analysis will typically show that a disproportionate improvements can be achieved by ranking various causes of a problem and by concentrating on those solutions or items with the largest impact. The basic premise is that not all have the same or even proportional impact on a given situation. When causes are identified, other root causes analysis techniques, such as the five whys or fishbone diagram, can be used to dig down further. Okay, here's a chart here. We have an example of a Pareto chart, and here we have a broad nonconformances. Just looking at, assume this is could be a production facility where maybe having some issues with paint. Going to look at the paint as the problem or nonconformance here. want to break it down a little bit further. So we see the issues related to paint, where they've been grouped down into other needs for corrective action. You can see light spray is by far been the biggest issue with paint nonconformances. Runs, dips, blisters, and splatters are the top five there, which will attribute to 80% of the problems concerning the nonconformances with paints. This will take each one of those separately, break it down, concentrate on the biggest causes that relate to paint nonconformances. Again, advantages and disadvantages. Advantages, organizational efficiencies. Requires that organization lift changes that are needed, then they are ranked. Enhanced problem-solving skills enables people to organize work-related problems into cohesive facts. Finally, improved decision-making. Documentation will enable better preparation and improvement in decision-making for a future change. Going to look at some disadvantages here. One problem is it tends to focus on the past. Past data may not accurately represent the current situation. Inaccurate problem solving. You should examine the quality and relationship within each problem rather than using it for a strictly qualitative conclusion. Mistaken application may extend the usefulness of Pareto analysis beyond its intended application. And there's a website there for reference for anyone who would like to explore this method further. Okay, so we looked at root cause. We looked at root cause analysis. We looked at methods and techniques, which is the first thing, according to the standard, that you need to do is find the cause, do your root cause analysis. 4.11.3, selection and implementation of corrective action. Where corrective action is needed, the laboratory shall identify potential corrective action. It shall select and implement the actions most likely to eliminate the problem and to prevent reoccurrence. So these potential corrective actions have been identified. So the laboratory should implement corrective action after the decision has been made as to what course of action or actions would most likely fix the nonconformance and prevent the nonconformance from happening again. This next one here is still coming under selection and implementation of corrective action. Corrective action shall be a degree appropriate to the magnitude and the risk of the problem. The easiest way I could think to explain this is a lab may choose to have different processes for corrective action depending on their severity. So for example, we may have a single lab, so we could have a total breakdown. At PJLA, when we do write nonconformances, we identify them as a major or minor. A major, for example, you have an element, you have a requirement, you have a section in 17025 in regards to management reviews. Basically, you have to do them. You have to establish a predetermined schedule. You have to have a policy, procedure. It needs to address various issues. A major would be if that is a total lapse. Management reviews are not conducted. They're not addressed within the quality management system. It's a total breakdown in that area. A minor would be perhaps they're being done according to a predetermined schedule. As an assessor, I'm reviewing your management review, and I look and I see that your management review that I'm reviewing did not take into account customer feedback, which is a requirement within 17025. That would be considered a minor. Hence, the corrective action for the major would be selected differently than that opposed to the minor, because the major is much more severe. It represents a total lapse or a total absence of a required element which the lab needs to be complying with. Continuing with selection and implementation of corrective action, 4.113, the laboratory shall document and implement any required changes resulting from corrective action investigation. Hence, we're looking for records, saying we as an assessor, or even you as a laboratory, if you're the quality manager or you're doing an internal audit in the laboratory, any corrective actions needs to be supported by a record, which our records are needed to support the compliance. The records should support that a non-conformance was identified, root cause analysis was completed, potential corrective action identified, selected, and implemented, and as you'll see here in a little bit, and that corrective action was monitored. Typically, as an assessor, corrective action, there's a policy and procedure. Typically, there's forms. The form is a document. Once you start writing on that form, it's become a record. So hence, you may have a form that's dedicated to corrective action. Ideally, the form would mimic what your procedure states, which hopefully complies with the requirement of 17025. Where you would identify the very first thing is the root cause, and then go in and list potential. Then go ahead and select and implement one. And then you'll see here in a little bit, once it's been implemented, excuse me, it needs to be monitored and determined as effective, and it was effective. Which brings us to 411.4. Monitoring of corrective action. I got the word highlighted there, shall. So a shall is a must. Those of you all that took my webinar earlier in the year on internal auditing, we emphasize that whenever the word shall appears in the standard, that is a requirement. So the laboratory shall monitor the results to ensure that the corrective action taken have been effective. As we're looking at the records should provide support that an effectiveness check was completed. There may have been several corrective actions that could have been implemented. If the initial corrective action does not work or perhaps create additional problem solving, then repeat the process until the effective corrective action has been monitored and verified as being effective. The key to verification is evidence. The responsible personnel should seek factual evidence that the root cause has been reduced or removed. This evidence usually takes the form of data or records available. Another powerful form of evidence is your own first-hand observation. That's not easy to say that you can't accept verbal evidence, but records, data, and first-hand observations are certainly better. A record should be retained that once corrective action had been and it was revisited and verified as being effective. So hence, looking at a corrective action record, we see everything implemented. excuse me, effective action, excuse me, corrective action actually implemented. What I don't like to see is perhaps is verified as being effective one day after the fact that it was implemented. Let's say, for example, you had customer complaints that warranted a corrective action that had to do with turnaround time. Hence, you implemented a corrective action that put more resources into the to say calibration, hence reducing the turnaround time. It's going to be a little while before you can actually determine whether or not that corrective action has been effective. Hence, perhaps as a means of determining whether it has been effective is perhaps 30 days, start recalling, calling on customers that has issued a concern over that and see if the problem has been resolved and it's no longer an issue with that particular customer. So again, I'd like to see a sign off as an assessor and effective. I could question it more as to how did you determine it was effective, but the requirement is that it has to be monitored and determined to be effective once it's taken. Lastly, under corrective action is a section 411.5 additional audits. And basically what this states is, right from the standard, where the identification of nonconformances or departure casts doubt on the laboratory's compliance with its own policies and procedures or on its compliance with this international standard, the laboratory shall ensure that the appropriate areas of activities are audited in accordance with 414 as soon as possible. And as a further note, such additional audit shall follow the implementation of corrective action to confirm their effectiveness. Additional audit should be necessary only when a serious issue or risk to the business is identified. So section 414, of course, is a section on internal audits. Hence, if the corrective action warrants an additional audit, you would need to revisit section 414. Whatever area of the standard that the nonconformance or the corrective action identified, that section would need to be audited as soon as possible. So what warrants an additional audit? An internal additional audits will need to be conducted in accordance with 414 when the determination of the root cause determines that the laboratory may not be in compliance with its own policies and procedures. And if you have a quality management system, you've written, your quality management system complies with the standard. So within the QMS or quality management system, you are stating exactly what you're supposed to be doing in order to comply with the standard. Hence, an audit would be conducted if it's determined that you are not in compliance with basically what's in effect within your own quality manual and your own quality management system and the policies and procedures that have been written to support your operation and compliance with a standard, i.e. 17025, which leads to the second internal audit, excuse me, the second reason in which corrective action may incorporate an additional audit would be when the determination of the root cause reveals that a laboratory may not be in compliance with ISO IEC 17025-2005 standard.